From the Moon Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn, and thanks for joining us during our winter membership drive. Today, my guest for the entire show is singer and songwriter Liz Phair.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. I was just looking. The indie rocker who was at a New York studio when we spoke burst on the scene in 1993 with her debut record, Exile in Guyville. She followed that with a number of albums and then sort of retreated for a while to raise her son. Now 52 years old, Liz Phair has a memoir. It's called Horror Stories. And in the prologue, she describes a phone call with her manager following the death of Prince in 2016.
It was a very funny phone conversation, a unique conversation where he kind of challenged me in a way I wasn't expecting. You know, I didn't think of myself as old, but he was like, Liz, you know, none of us know how long we've got. You know, you don't know. Are you going to be here tomorrow? You don't know. Is what you're making right now what you would want to leave behind if it was the last thing you ever did? And it just shook me up because I suddenly thought, like, no, I have more to say. I have more to say that I would like to say. And that's sort of when I started writing.
And your book is out now. This may seem almost like an existential question, but is Liz Phair the songwriter and Liz Phair the author the same person?
We are. We are, says the royal we. We are the same person. I would say Liz Phair is a narrower, if you picture a pie chart, right? Picture an 18% wedge of that pie chart. And then extend that wedge outward as if it's a focused beam of energy that is so strong it just like shoots out of the pie chart. That would be Liz Phair. And then the person who wrote the book is sort of all of me, the whole pie chart, the whole everybody.
Because very early in the book you wrote, and I'm quoting yourself back to yourself, you say, I'm trusting you with my deepest self. And I'm wondering if you think you can be more honest as a writer than you are as a musician?
In a way, obviously you have more room to explain a situation, get more granular with it, and really sort of muse about the unanswered questions. I think that was maybe the most fun thing about the prose writing is that I can wrestle with a problem that I can't find a solution to, and I can wrestle with it page after page, and it's interesting. But it doesn't resolve. And I think with a song, you kind of have to resolve it and kind of say, like, doo-doop, here's what I'm setting up, here's what's happening, and here's what your takeaway is. It's just, it's almost symbolically stated in a song. I'm going to give you the intense points and nothing else. And in prose, you can really slow time down, bring you into the experience as if you're looking out of my eyes, feeling everything I'm feeling, and I can really take you on a journey.
I want to play a bit of a song from your first record, Exile in Guyville. This song is called F***ing Run.
I woke up alone. I didn't know where I was at first, just that I woke up in your arms. And almost immediately I felt sorry because I didn't think this would.
You write in the book, everybody thinks this song is about sex, and on one level it is, but it's also about these moments when real connection and feeling is abandoned in favor of self-preservation. And it got me thinking about the way an artist sees his or her songs and the way an audience does and where they align and when they don't and what that's like, that occasional disconnect.
I have never found it served anyone to answer the question that is commonly asked of me, what is this song about? Every single time I explain what I think it's about, it disappoints whoever I'm speaking with.
Because they have
really
this whole
sad.
Idea of what they want it
they
to be.
They have this whole idea of what they want it to be about. And for them, if that is what it is about, that is what it is about. It really isn't mine anymore. And I know that's a cliche. Everyone says that, oh, I send it off into the world. They're like my children, but I let them go. I don't think of my songs as my children, but I also don't think of them as mine once they're completed. Once a song has been recorded properly, it ceases to be mine. It can be created by me, but it belongs to everybody at that point in a weird way.
We're talking with Liz Phair about her new book, Horror Stories. There's a chapter in this book called Hashtag, and there's a lot going on in it, but I want to ask you about a couple of things. And one is that you write, being female in the entertainment industry can sometimes feel like running a never-ending gauntlet of horny dudes. If you think I invited that kind of interest after I published sexually frank lyrics, you'd have gotten the cause and effect flipped. And then you write on the same page, they can't make you an object, I reasoned, if you are adamantly and vociferously the subject of your own sexuality. So that's what you believed, but then other people saw you in a different light based on what you were singing about. So what is your takeaway from how you wanted to be seen and how people interpreted what you were trying to say?
That's a very good question. I think that never quite resolves for me. I saw it. I knew what I was doing. I knew that it would be provocative for a woman to sing so explicitly about sex. So I intended that, certainly. I did not realize how the sexual aspects would eclipse any discussion of anything else, or how that would be picked up in a headline and sort of amplified. I thought of it as rightfully a part of my personality. And there was a lot of song. I mean, there were 18 songs on Exile in Guyville, and I would say at least 15 aren't really about sex per se. They may have dynamics that involve that, but they're not like explicitly sexual. And I think, again, why is this culture so comfortable with violence and so uncomfortable with sexuality? Why is that? It's weird. It doesn't seem healthy to me psychologically.
Well, and there's, I think, more to it than that, that a woman can be sex positive in her life and in her art, and that's considered an invitation to be described in a certain way, whereas men can do that, and they're not categorized.
Right. We have this idea that this is biological destiny, and there's so many more forces shaping it than that.
When we come back, Liz Phair shares how she spoke with her son about porn. Yeah, you heard me right, porn. And I asked Henry, my bartending friend, if I should bother dating unfamous men. And Henry said, you're lucky to even know me. Welcome back to this Pledge Drive edition of The Frame. I'm John Horn, and our guest today is singer-songwriter Liz Phair. Last year, her debut album, Exile in Guyville, got a re-release for its 25th anniversary. She's currently working with the producer of that record on some new music, but in the meantime, she's written a memoir. It's called Horror Stories, and it's a collection of reflections on her life in the music industry and as a mom. Phair writes that singing frankly about sex was just one part of what she did, but it came to define her in some people's eyes.
Just in the 2 years that the Me Too movement has been blazing, I feel on social media a difference in tone. I feel, you know, for whatever reason, more respected, more my boundaries respected more, less sort of horny solicitations. And I have to say, it's nice. It's kind of nice. You know, like, it ain't so bad on the other side, at least not for me.
You're probably writing this book all around the time that Harvey Weinstein and Les Moonves, and you write in almost kind of an offhand way about the propositions that you got, mostly from record label executives, including somebody who's like, I'll pay you $5,000 a month to be my live-in concubine. You're like, I make twice that amount on the road. And yet it seems so casual. It seems like this is the thing that any woman has to deal with on a daily basis.
I'm sorry to tell you, but that's the truth. Like, this is what seems so weird to me, is how many men are unaware of what women's lives are like, especially and most particularly if you step out of your lane, if you dare to live a life that isn't one of the prescribed and approved of roles for women. you're basically fair game. And that hurts. That feels bad. That's not a positive thing. And I think I wrote that chapter in the end to kind of just say the point is not all the separate things that happened. The point is I don't want to have to feel like I'm guarding my sexuality behind like a defensive wall just to grow up and be mature and have sexual relationships. I would like a world in which I can do both. I can be intelligent and safe and still have sex. That's pretty much all I want.
I met him at a party.
How do you think art plays in that equation? How do you think a songwriter, a playwright, a filmmaker can use his or her voice to say, this is the way that people should talk about each other?
I think it's very important. I think artistic output, we're kind of like creating myths for us to believe in. Like that's sort of what our entertainment industry does. It's a myth-making industry. I think the problem has largely been that women haven't been seen as separate individuals. They're more like, if a man's life is complete, he's got one of those, you know?
Yeah.
And if I can't have her as mine, what use is she to me? I need to go find someone who will be my woman because that completes my life. And she's supposed to do certain things. And that's sort of an old mentality. No, thank you. Next myth. Please. And that's where artists step in. They give us different myths to believe in and shoot for.
We're talking with Liz Phair about her new book, Horror Stories. Even if you don't really think about or worry about what people read into your songs, how important is it that they feel that you are singing about something that is relevant to their lives, especially for women and young women, that they feel like you are telling stories that make them feel understood?
That's my whole thing. That's my whole thing. I don't want to write songs, or actually, it's not true. I do write songs that are not the kind that would resonate with a listener. They're just very particular to me, and I try to keep them off the albums because they don't fulfill what I want to be doing, which is to extend a hand of friendship out there and say, like, are you feeling alone in the cosmos? I'm here too. You know, like, that's sort of what I'm interested in doing is eliciting a certain emotion from someone, explaining what it was like for me to go through it and inviting them to sort of think about their own experiences and feel less alone.
And how does that change as you grow older?
Well, I want to talk about all sorts of stuff that isn't sexy and fun to talk about, like aging and death and stuff. Like, I think about it. Once you pass 50, I think the horizon is there and you see it. And it's beautifully poignant. I mean, you really do understand your parents, finally. You really do understand what a gift every day is. And I try to get up and appreciate. I mean, it doesn't always work, but I try to appreciate how lucky I am. I especially feel that way when I see colleagues and people pass away.
I'm going to ask you one last question. I think you have a teenage son. Is that right?
Well, he's 22.
Okay. So if you have a young son, I have a 19-year-old son. I will tell you, he's not listening to Liz Phair right now, but he's listening to a lot of hip hop. And I'm curious, when you hear teenage kids, maybe your own, listening to music that is, maybe it's complicated, but maybe it's ultimately a little misogynistic. What are the conversations that you have as a parent about musical taste? Because it's really tricky for me, and I'm wondering how you navigate that.
I don't think there's a good way to do that, or I'm not a good enough parent to navigate that well. I think where it came up in our household, because my son, he's into his stuff is more like synth wave. He's into that kind of like 80s revival. Or no, I'm going to get in trouble if I say that. I can't speak for what he likes. I do know he introduced me to synth wave, but I am not authorized to speak on his behalf. But I think with porn and stuff, I did try to tell my son, like, that doesn't feel good to a woman, okay? Like, you need to know that. You need to know that, like, when you're physically with another person, that it's a different thing than what you're watching, you know? In the same way that you go to a movie, you wouldn't just like shoot someone or flip your car. I did spend some time explaining the difference and the importance of the difference between porn and real connection.
So you may not listen. You may not listen to hip hop with your son, but you watch porn with your son. Is that the takeaway?
No. Oh, no, I can't. I was not one of those monitoring mothers that, like, you know, made sure he could only see this, that, and the other thing. I kept pretty good track of it for a while. And then when he hit, like, adolescence, there was just no stopping it. So I just tried to work on the character and the brain. I think I did okay. He's pretty great.
Liz Phair's new book is called Horror Stories. Liz, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
And that is it for The Frame today. Thanks for listening both on the radio and on demand. And thanks for supporting KPCC. I'm John Horn, and we'll see you tomorrow back here at the Moen Broadcast Center.